Hello and welcome to episode 7 of the Entrepreneur Experiment. I'm Gary Fox. This week we have an absolutely fascinating chat for you. I really enjoy doing this one. It's with Fabio Molle, the founder of Funky Christmas Jumpers and Functional Tennis. So Fabio is a fascinating guy. We have a really, what I can only describe as a wide-ranging chat covering everything from how he started his first business to having tea with Niall Horan in his house in Mullingar after he had a jumper emergency. I hope you enjoy it. If you do, please do leave us some feedback on iTunes. It's really appreciated. Here we go. Fabio, how are you?
Good, Gary. It's great to be here.
So who are you and why are you here?
I'm here because you dragged me here. You tied me up and dragged me here. My name's Fabio Molle, and I'm probably here because of my work with Funky Christmas Jumpers over the past 10 years. We're probably Ireland's leading Christmas jumper company, selling to over 50 countries worldwide through our e-commerce site.
Okay, you guys were probably the first, were you? We were here before it was...
We were one of the first. I think there's one UK company that used to hand-make them, and they only hand-made a handful every year, and they'd sell out really quickly. And October, they would have sold out. And that's why we got going, because we couldn't get them anywhere else, apart from some terrible ones on eBay, which would have been probably generations old, and we decided to make our own. So, yeah, I'd say we were one of the first in Ireland, UK, like doing it more at a higher production level.
And kind of the structure of the Entrepreneur Experiment is, first of all, it's idea generation. So did you guys go to try generate this idea, or how did it start?
Just start as a need. We had some friends who were going out having a good time wearing these handmade ones in the UK, and we were like, oh, we want to have a good time too. Like, these guys have more crack than us. So what do we got to do here? And we tried to get them back in 2007, and we couldn't get them. So we said, let's get our own made. So it was more from a need that we produced for ourselves.
Yeah.
And we thought, yeah, other people might enjoy this as well. And that's where it started. And we know, like, my own experience is in, I'm a software engineer, degree from DCU, but then I worked in a family takeaway business when I graduated. So, and had a bit of I did manage one project. I got some stuff built. So I had a bit of software background and a catering, but I had no marketing background, no e-commerce background. Kieran, the guy who I set it up with, he was from a software background. So yeah, we'd no marketing, we'd no e-commerce. The likes of Shopify wasn't around back then to make open stores really easy. Like, we just had, I think Kieran built just a one-page website, and he integrated PayPal into it and built their own shopping cart. So it was a lot harder back then to set up a store. And obviously, yeah, as I said, we had no marketing experience, so we just learned on the go.
I think we take that for granted now, don't we? Because, like, you can set up a store today. Like, you could go, let's just set up a Shopify store now. And it's almost step by step.
Like, we could set up a Shopify store now and drop ship products and have a sale by tonight. Like, it can move that quick. Like, and yeah, like, Shopify is great though, which I use now in some other projects, and makes life so easy, and it's unbelievable.
So you had to build everything from scratch. You were both software background, but how did that kind of come about?
Well, we'd no other option. Okay. That was it. So we just went with it. And yeah, Kieran was the main software guy, and he put it all together, and it just worked. It was a one page website with three jumpers on it. And then you'd add to cart, and I think it brought you to PayPal. So PayPal, all transactions would have been PayPal based back then.
And where did you get the jumpers from?
We got them designed ourselves. Initially, okay, I thought we had to get patterns made, and I was sending them proper cut out patterns. I have to send them to China, back to a designer who was in the States. It's like, this is going all over the place here. It's going to be mad expensive sending these stuff. Then I realized it was actually a lot easier than that. We could work off images and measurements rather than actual having sent patterns. So everything was done through email. And I would have went through a lot of manufacturers finding the right one. So I spent a lot of 2008 back then. It was pre-Alibaba. And I still don't know to this day how I found them. I can't remember how.
That was my next question.
Yeah, everybody asked, how'd you find? I said, I just scoured Google really hard. Yeah. And now, like, even the likes of now, there's tools out there where it's more state-based, but there's, like, companies called, like, Panjiva, where you can see what other companies are importing. So I can get a competitor in the States I can find out exactly what factory they're importing from, how many shipments they're getting. Every time a shipment lands for them in the States, I get an email to say,
really,
a shipment has landed for them. It's come from this factory. Now, the bigger companies use holding companies, so you don't know where it's, you don't know the manufacturers, but the medium-sized ones, smaller ones, in the States, you can track everything. It's all true. Yeah, it's US import data, which you can get on the US government site, but it's really hard to read and get the info. But there's other companies just put a facade on it and sell you like a monthly license, and you can find out anything. Like,
that's incredible. So you can do all your research.
You can do all, like, you could find out, if you're the US competitor, you could find out today what sort of stuff, what they're importing, where it's coming from, if it's coming from Asia, what factory it is. And yeah, you could be in contact with that factory tomorrow.
Back when you did it, it was just literally trial and error.
Trial and error chances, getting some samples made, getting my mom to wash them, and making sure they didn't shrink. And that was it.
How long did that take? So the second part of the entrepreneur experiment is prototyping. So who designed them first? And then what was the next step for that?
I think designer, again, I just scoured the web and found a clothes designer. And I think we got measurements from them. So we got measurements from them, and I think I got some other designer who did some three simple graphics for us that we made a pattern for, and that was it.
You make it sound so easy.
Looking back, it was easy. That time was panic. Like, I still remember saying, how is this going to work? And then it just got easier. Like, we just worked a lot off images.
How did two software guys start designing clothes? What was your first?
I wouldn't call us clothes designers now, but...
I've never designed a jumper, so no. How did you learn?
You just go with it. Look, you get a general idea of what you want. Mm. You ask the designer for it. They come back with options. You pick one. It gets sent to the manufacturer then. They come back with some samples, and that's it. You get make changes, and that's it. It's easier than you think to get stuff done. It's quite easy.
How long did the whole process take? So how did you get your first design and then the first prototype? So how long did that take?
We go with now. Mm. If you get a design made up, the sample drawings made up, that can take as long as you want. Like, you have ideas, it can take 2 to 4 weeks.
Okay.
So you have those guys, and then sampling takes about 3 weeks. Let's say then a week to get sent to you, so you're a month later. And then it's up to you how quick you approve if you need any changes. If you need any changes, it's a month after. So you keep on adding a month every change you want. And then once you're happy with it, sometimes you go straight from change to full production. Mm. You just know it's something small.
Okay.
And then production takes manufacturer different, like 40 to 60 days, sometimes a bit longer, 40 to 90 days, depending on the manufacturer. And then from there, it takes about 4 days to get to port. And then if you ship them over or sea freight them over, so there's big price differences there. You obviously want to sea freight them. And that can take 35 to 40 days from China to Dublin.
Okay, so it's a long process. Yeah. So when did you start? 2007 is when you started.
2008 was our first Christmas that we sold. So let's say we started the 1st of January 2008.
Wow, okay.
Yeah, so 11 years now.
Okay. Mm. And then from the first design, say, until you sold your first jumper, what was the time process there?
We probably the process started in early January 2008, and we didn't sell till November 2008.
How did you keep that going? How did you keep that drive that it was
definitely the right idea? We both had other jobs. Like, I was working a family business. Kieran was day-to-day software engineer. So it's not that we were sitting at a desk, what are we going to do? And then it was like the jumpers landed, and we're like, how are we actually going to sell these? We hadn't even thought about marketing. Like, they landed, we're like, shit, what do we do here now? And yeah, we just went basic. What do we do? It was just simple stuff. Like, we tried to get on the radio. We did a lot of like these A0 boards that you'd see on the the present campaigns, the election boards.
Oh, yeah.
We used a lot of them. Like, we plastered them up everywhere.
Really?
And funny enough, we had one on the Dublin bus in Donnybrook. We had one there. It lasted about a year and a half there.
Really?
Just, it was on the side, the pedestrian entrance on the middle of the road. And we never forgot to take it down.
No one
and
said
that really helped
to
us
you.
Get known. Everybody knew that. Until one of our competitors then, the year after, ripped it down. About a year and a half later, ripped it down. Yeah.
Guerrilla warfare in the Christmas jumper market.
So it was that, it got to one stage where I think I got threatened that some guy was going to come over and break my legs with a baseball bat.
Really?
Yeah, one of our competitors was had a voicemail on my phone saying, I'm going to come over and break your legs with a baseball bat, because I think they did, our competitors had used a picture from a UK company at the time. This was maybe second or third year in business. And we got on to UK competitor and said, these guys are using your picture here. So they said, I'm not sure what went back for day and then, but they were really pissed off. They told them it was us who reported it. And they just threatened us. Yeah,
really?
Because I think, we were at it. We did Toys for Boys in the second year. Big Toys for Big Boys.
Do you remember
that?
RDS or something?
Yeah, which was great fun. And we did that. And they came over and were asking us questions. You know, two random lads. And I think they were on, not Dragon's Den. They were on, what's the name of the other show? Did a show where the Apprentice, one of these guys was on
really?
The Apprentice, and we kind of recognized them. And then, like a week later, too, we see they're selling Christmas jump, they're fishing for information.
Wow.
And anyway, that stuff and all of this kicked off. And yeah, until I got threatened that somebody's gonna come over and break my leg.
Wow,
yeah, so gets pretty hairy.
Christmas jumper market seems so peaceful,
it's pretty. So yeah, they were good, fun days. Like,
it's mad though to start when you have all your competitors. We used to get that a lot at the start as well. You get these phone calls and you just know, it was brilliant. One day we got a phone call from this guy in the UK, and you kind of get a sixth sense.
Yeah, you know.
You're kind of like, oh, here we go. Oh, I have a 2-bed apartment on Thomas Street. You can nearly hear him Googling it. And then he just had the bad luck to pick the number that was actually beside one of our properties.
Okay.
He was like, it's 80, yeah, it's 80 Thomas
Street.
And I was like, okay, yeah, no, I know that building, yeah. And then he was like, and as we were talking, I was typing in his number, and it turns out it was one of the UK companies that were trying to come into the market. And they used to call us all the time.
Yeah, chanting.
I used to have crack with them.
You've probably done the same.
Oh, 100%.
So can't blame them, really.
Oh, 100%. So that was your idea prototype. How many jumpers did you get?
Oh, I think the first year was, I can't remember, 700, I think.
That's a huge amount of jumpers.
Yeah, we just did, maybe there was minimum order. I can't remember now. But yeah, we just thought, we didn't know how we were going to sell them. And I think we sold out. We managed to sell them all, which was a great achievement. There was a tipping point where I think the late Jerry Ryan was talking about Christmas jumpers. We tried to put out the feelers.
Mm.
And he was talking about them. My sister rang me and she said, I was just on the phone to Jerry Ryan. She'd rang up Jerry Ryan saying, my brother sells Christmas jumpers.
Only in Ireland.
Only in Ireland. And the sales we went from selling a few a day, like a couple a day, to like 35 a day.
Wow.
Just with that mention on the radio.
Isn't it amazing, though, the power of traditional media still?
Oh, it's really powerful. Now, I'm not sure, we haven't really been on the radio the past few years. I'm not sure, but for us, for numerous years, that was a big... It was a big launch pad for us.
I was similar. I had focused exclusively on Facebook ads and online and blog posts, and thinking that was exactly it. And then we managed to get featured in the Irish Times, and that was just night and day. Immediately the phone started ringing. And to this day, I still get people ringing. And I'd always ask everyone, how'd you hear about us? And they're like, oh, I saw you in the paper. That was 3 years ago.
I think it's a mix of, we did have a PR company back then, which were great, not thing in 2010, 11, 12, which were great because they really got us into a lot. And it was not digital, it was all print work.
Okay.
And which was amazing because we were getting to mention the papers, we were getting features, we're in gift guides, all them things are, people still heavily read the gift guides. And they were great. But I think a mixture of that, it's a mixture of, I heard them on the radio, I saw them on the paper, I saw them on Facebook, I saw them on Instagram. And if you can get all those, and my mates talking about them, I think to be successful, you really need all those things. And like I don't know the guys, but I see like Jim and Coffee.
Yes,
they've done an unbelievable job at just building the community. And I thought we were quite good at building the community back then. I think we were building more a going out community. We used to have parties in our store and get DJs in. They're building more, it's changed to more health conscious now, and they're building an unbelievable community. So I really, really proud of what those guys have done, even though I don't know them. Yeah. I think it's really great. Actually, and they've managed to grow their product range so quick.
Mm.
So, yeah, fair play to them.
I'd love to know their story, actually. We'll try to get them on.
Yeah, no, I think they're really good.
I was in Dundrum, the shopping centre there, about 2 weeks ago, and they actually have a store there now. Mm. That's colossal.
Oh, they've moved quick, like, and they've managed to, I think it was a pop store initially, but they managed to keep it going. And we all know how much rents are. So, yeah, they've done a great job, and they sell internationally. They've built up this tribe of followers, and it's just really, it reminds me of the early days of us, but they're lucky in a way they can sell a product throughout the year and they can constantly grow. We were growing 2 months a year and then disappearing and come back and trying the same. So there's no there's no flow.
Was that very difficult? That kind of stop start? Like, you work so hard just to build up the momentum.
And you just have to disappear then, because nobody wants to know about you. You can't talk about Christmas. So, yeah, we'd pop up again, either it was early November, then it got to be mid-November, October, and they'd be like, okay, but before that, you just can't mention it at all. Google hates, you know, even Google hates it, because you wanted some traffic, consistent traffic to your website.
Of course, you drop off usually.
You just drop off completely, like.
And did you ever look then at other avenues during the year to kind of...
We tried Paddy's Day stuff, but... let's say 10% of our sales came from the US, which wasn't enough. Like, if we were 80% US, the Paddy stuff would have worked. It took a couple of years to realize that Irish people don't buy Paddy's Day stuff. It's the Americans. So we tried that, didn't work. Tried a couple of other smaller things, tried to pivot on a different brand, but we just didn't really execute it right. Maybe we weren't fully committed. Could have been that was the problem. We still sort of did some stuff on the side in the early days, and we weren't fully, we didn't say drop everything, we're at the stage where we can fully commit on this. We didn't do
that. Okay. And then the third stage of the experiment is idea testing. I think you guys went straight from idea generation to launch, really.
We did. We were testing, like, we used to go out every night of the week. Like, more so Kieran, the co-founder, and then there was Don, another guy, Don McSherry, great friend of mine, came involved then, I think from the third year onwards, so there was three of us. But the early years was just going out all the time. And
you'd be just wearing the jumpers,
Out people would see it, and sometimes even sold the ones we'd honest. Like, people would buy it. Like, we'd come up with more money we went out with. Like, and so, yeah, so we could see the reaction we were getting out there. People were loving it. And that's, we were promoting, like, so it was a lot of fun promoting back. Now I wouldn't have the energy to do it, but, or the will to go out drinking. But
yeah.
I think Kieran at one stage drank about, like, I wouldn't be proud talking about how many nights in a row we drank, but used to wear the jumper every night. Everybody loved it. We got a kick out from it,
of course.
And we were promoting on this. We were on this guerrilla marketing. We were promoting out there, and like we'd go out with like hundreds of stickers, and we'd be stickering people up and messing people. We used to get photos of people like waking up with stickers all over them. We used to have a stamper. We used to stamp people. I think another time we went out and we knew payday was like tomorrow or today, like,
of course,
like, we went out, we stickered up every ATM machine, like in Dublin 2,
really,
yeah, Dublin 1 and 2, everyone we stickered up, like, so people were taking out money next morning and they're seeing these stickers, so all this sort of stuff paid off. And so we knew our testing was really being out in the market, seeing what people want, if they liked it, and That was our testing, I'd say.
So you created like an echo effect then around being traditional and just literally guerrilla marketing.
Yeah, guerrilla marketing.
Being everywhere.
And then like we had our store in St. William Street, we used to get the tourists would all come in. And they'd be like, oh, we saw people out last night with these crazy jumpers. So then we're getting the feedback of what we knew was still, where other people were sort of marketing for us. We had our logo on our jumper so people could easily see it. And yeah, so that was... key is just,
where did the Christmas jumper craze come from? Because like when you're talking about there, 10 years ago, 2007, it wasn't a thing. And now you have the 10 Bucks Christmas, and now you have so many things built around Christmas jumpers.
Yeah,
and
not as many now, unfortunately.
It's a fad.
It's because it's a Christmas thing, it sort of lasts a few more years than a health fad, which may last 6 months.
Mm.
Where did it come from? I think we built a lot of momentum there. And then once the smaller companies start building a bit of momentum, the big guys get on board. So the Pennies get on board, the Dunns get on board, and then they pump in the marketing. They make it really mainstream. And some people say they're competitors. Yes, they are, but they've also made the market a lot bigger. and not everybody buys pennies all the time, so there's always room for us. We always felt those guys made the market a lot bigger.
I remember seeing at the time, back probably 2008, 2009, 2010, you guys popped up a lot in terms of like celebrities wearing your jumpers as well. How did that come around?
That was just, they were the early influencer marketing days.
Yeah.
We were pioneers.
It wasn't even a thing. That's how, it's funny, it sticks in my mind. Always when I think of you guys, I think of the likes of Rory McIlroy and people like that wearing your jumpers.
I think that that's where Donald, the other guy working with, was really good, where he just chased the celebrities. Like, he'd figure out a way to get in there, like with Niall Horan, like figured out holes in his team. Like, I think he got in through his like makeup artist or hairdresser, and through them he got his stylist info, and then established a relationship there, and then we'd send them stuff. And yeah, One Direction period, we end up in Niall Horan's house a few years having tea with him.
Really?
Yeah, he had a jumper emergency, so we went down
there. He had a jumper emergency.
You gotta tell that story. Yeah, no,
just
text us one morning, hey lads, really need a jumper, can you drop down? Like, so we went down to Mullingar and we had lunch with him, and he starts singing us songs and in his living room. It was amazing. Like, and then he'd
jumper emergency.
Yeah, and then he'd be like, oh, any chance for a shout out? Now, he'll write your own tweet there. So we're on his phone writing our own tweet. Like, and a couple of years that
when they were at the peak of their powers, I guess, as well.
Yeah. And did we get a lot of sales from that? No. I was actually on Dragon's Den in the UK, and I used that. I was up in one of the videos, and Peter Jones says to me, so like, oh, great, you got all these guys wearing your jumpers, but did they relate to hard sales? And I was like, no. And he goes, for that reason, I'm out.
Really?
Yeah. But we got a lot of authenticity from it. We were a more genuine company. It separated us from our competitors. And that's what it did. That's what all the celebrity stuff does. It gave us credibility, really.
How did the Dragon's Den story come about? That's when you slipped in there. I didn't even know that.
How did that come? I think we applied for it early on, never came. And then a few years ago, they got on to me and said, so would you like to be in Dragon's Den? And I was sort of like, I could probably do it a bit of investment. I could probably do it. Still hadn't broken into the UK. And yeah, I'd give it a go. So I gave it, I did it all by myself, like put the pitch together, had to set up a UK company. I put the pitch, learned everything. Then they say, oh no, everything has to be in Stirling. So I had to relearn everything in Stirling. And yeah, built a little set myself and got a van, put it all in there and drove over.
Wow.
And I remember I got there about 6 a.m. I got there the day before, but went to BBC at about 6 a.m. and I didn't pitch till 6 p.m. that night. Everybody else had pitched. I was knackered.
I'm always, this is so good you brought this up. I'm always watching that going, I wonder what really happened.
Oh, it was the longest day ever. I was just sitting in a little green room waiting to go, and I was last on, and it was just a nightmare. And it's like, you know, you're nervous. It's only normal to be nervous against these dragons you've seen on TV, and they've destroyed people.
Yeah.
But I think mine went okay. Yeah, went okay, and they asked me questions, probably in there about 45 minutes, which is rather quick. Sometimes people in there 2 hours, like.
Really?
Yeah, because they ask them questions. They want to go through their business stuff, their finance stuff, and they may have IP stuff they want to go through. So it lasts a lot longer than the 2 minutes. Mm. And I sort of used it as a bit of maybe free publicity for the UK, but they aired it in September, which was a pain in the ass.
Why, too early?
Yeah, too early. Who wants to talk about Christmas? And they didn't even tell me there. I sort of found out through an advert on TV.
No way, really?
Yeah. So I still remember walking in. They were playing Christmas music, Mariah Carey, All I Want for Christmas. And I did the worst dance of my life. I won't call myself a good dancer at all. I did the worst dance, and the lads still take the piss out of me.
I'm going to Google this the minute we finish this.
I thought it didn't exist online until, I don't know how, one of my friend's girlfriends randomly found it. Because some guy was doing some research on me, and he managed to find it on Giphy or somewhere like that.
They're all on Netflix now, I think, a lot of the early seasons.
Mine was, but I think it's gone.
Okay.
And
don't worry, I'll find it.
I'll put it in the show notes. I do have recording the whole thing somewhere on my laptop.
That's amazing. What an experience, though.
Oh, it's great. Yeah.
I look at it so many times, I'm like, it must be so difficult to do that.
Mm-hmm. I thought it was difficult, but I'm glad I could have pulled out at any time, saying, oh, this is not for me. But I just pulled through and did it, and yeah, it was a good experience.
What are the dragons really like?
Yeah, they're okay.
Do you get to have a chat with them?
Or no, you just come in, they don't know anything about you, they hear your pitch, and then they question you.
And that's it?
Yeah. So, yeah, it was good. It was good. Good experience. Glad I did it. And you know what? I'm glad I didn't get investment, because it would have been maybe, yeah, sometimes I think it worked out that I didn't get investment. Yeah.
You often hear so many times, you hear, oh yeah, they agreed investment, but then never actually followed through.
Yeah, that happens a lot.
I think a lot of them don't actually follow through, because like there are so many things. Like a business can be riddled with problems, or I'm sure a lot goes on behind the scenes we don't actually see.
Yeah, no, you never get the full picture.
It's good TV though.
Yeah, no, it's good. Look, yeah, I don't think my pitch was one of the best, as in wasn't entertaining or nothing crazy came up.
But it must be hard though. I mean, if you're in there for 2 hours, you know, they can chop that down to maybe 60 seconds, 120 seconds.
I think the 2 hour ones are normally a bit longer though. They'd be 10 minute ones. But you know what? If you're the person in there, it's your business. You love your business.
Of course.
You love your business, so you don't mind talking about it. If you know your stuff,
you're
grand. It's like doing a presentation on something you know or you enjoy.
Yeah.
It's quite easy. If it's something you don't know, you will shit a brick.
Yeah, but it's like doing these podcasts. Like, I really enjoy just chatting to people like yourself, because I just love talking about like business and just stuff like this.
Yeah.
It's a lot of fun. You get to learn. But like, that's an interesting story. There's one for the book.
Yeah, it's a good one. Oh, yeah, that's why it would have been terrible had I pulled out of it.
Was there much of a bounce from it? Did you get much results from it? Are we able to track?
Zero.
Really?
Yeah. A bit of great. I was on Dragon's Den. I can write a blog post about it, this and that. And it makes a good story. But from sales wise, I think I got zero.
Wow.
Yeah.
You would think it would have a bounce. Did anyone contact you afterwards in terms of
one or two people?
Follow up media or anything? Did it get you much exposure here?
No. You need the 10 minute slot, really. It has to be more entertaining to get follow up media.
Okay.
May have got maybe one blog post done about it, or one report. That's all. Like,
wow.
Yeah.
I guess you never know what's going to come out of
it. So, you if you don't give it a go, you don't know.
And how did you guys then? So the fifth stage then, obviously we've gone past launch, stage four, and then stage five is testing and analysis. So how would you, I suppose it's very different for you guys, because it was all condensed into one, say, how long was the season? Two months?
10 weeks.
Okay, max. So what would you be looking at each year? What would change from year to year? How would you test the market and see what
year
changed?
Year growth, obviously improving your conversion rate, more visitors to the site. Like, they're the main things, really. Are people buying again? Like, are you growing internationally? Is your goal to get more sales in the States? What are you doing for that? Like, are you increasing your sales to the UK? You know, trying to increase your profit margin. You're always looking at different. That's how you see how things are moving. Like, we had an SEO company. Must have paid about 30 grand to help us in the States. Wow. And honestly, our sales went backwards in the States.
30 grand?
Yeah. And there was not a lot of work. Like, I was paying them. I was paying that was the SEO company I was paying the software guys, because we're not on Shopify for the jumpers, we're on Magento, so we're paying some webs to do stuff on the website, and I was doing some SEO work myself, so there's a lot. It was more than the 30 grand and our sales went down the States. It was depressing. Like,
how did your just reminding me of something you spoke about earlier, how did your initial one pager, how did that morph then into what it was? Onto Magento. So you start off with a one pager with PayPal.
We started off with a one pager on PayPal for a couple of years. Then we went BigCommerce. BigCommerce was like a shop. Was it better than Shopify? Would have launched about then, but BigCommerce was better.
Okay.
And then realized we want to sell in UK, Ireland, US, and we wanted different currencies. And Shopify and BigCommerce weren't great for that. So we went to Magento, which allowed us to have three different stores, which, to be honest with you, it was a pain in the ass. It's been a pain in the ass since, because hosting used to be expensive. Now it's come down a little bit with Amazon, AWS, but it's just so much easier to do with Shopify. I still need a coding team who do updates to the website, and so that can be expensive. We don't change as much now. It's more, works a lot better, but with Shopify you can manage it yourself. It's okay. So much easier. And yes, you can have three. I'm not sure the whole three side thing is messy when you're dealing with three different currencies, and you want to maximize the SEO for each country and for Google rankings. But yeah, definitely. Sorry, what was your question? Was how,
just
we
how
morph?
Did it morph into?
So
yeah.
Then we went to Magento. My brother actually put the site together initially, and I fired him then. The site went down a few times, and I remember we were launching 1 year, and we must have done like a 24-hour session to get the site ready. There's all little problems, and we know what was going on, because the year, I'm not sure if it was that year we launched, And this stupid thing, we'd about 15,000 email addresses, and I sent out like the MailChimp email to 15,000 people at like 11 o'clock all the same time. And sure, what happens? Okay. They all go to the website at the same time, and it just crashed. It was down. And they were traditionally your busiest days, where it was our launch day. Now it's changed since. And obviously the way I send out emails has changed now.
So you drip it out now.
You drip it out. I think with Shopify, you could do it now because they're so good. Mm. You could do it, but now you'd have to drip it out on my Magento store. I wouldn't take the chance. It was the most stressful day of my life. And then,
first world problems, I guess, in one way, in the fact that you had 15,000 people all trying to come on at one stage.
Yeah, well, we sent out 15, maybe there was only 500 people trying to come on at the one time. But I remember we'd seen Google Analytics Live, and you've seen the numbers go up, and all of a sudden it gets to 300. Boom, just go.
the red lights start flashing on the wall.
I'm not sure what ended up. Yeah, I fired my brother later that year, and then I got a company based in Lafayette to look after all the code, who've been great.
Yeah.
But yeah, I've done other projects. Like, I had a silk pillowcase business, which I built and sold in 11 months, but that was all done. It was all the stuff I learned with the jumpers.
Mm.
We used influencer marketing to get sales. And then, I realized silk pillowcases weren't for me. So we managed to sell it to a US company, which was great. And but it was all done through Shopify, which was like at a store set up, beautiful store set up in a day.
Really?
Obviously, there was photography work we did, and that took a bit of time. But then setting up the store was a piece of cake.
So if someone wanted to set up a store today, how would they go about it? Just straight to Shopify?
Just go straight to Shopify. And it helps you when you have your own product images, if you have your own editorial shoots, that sort of stuff makes your shop so much nicer. Okay. But you don't need it really, but that stuff makes you a bit different, and you can use the nicer teams to put a nice store together.
And what other kind of tools did you use then to kind of help the whole experience? What kind of other tools like Shopify do you use?
Main tools I use would be Shopify. Let's say, I'll talk about now where we have functional tennis is an Instagram account that I have with about 210,000 followers. And it's about 2.5 years old. And about half a year into that, we launched a website, functionaltennis.com. And then last year, we launched a journal. So it's a journal for tennis players to manage their tennis careers. And so it's an e-commerce store, and the tools I'd use would be obviously Shopify, MailChimp I'd use for the email marketing and to build up automated email sequences. So if somebody downloads one of our ebooks, they can get follow-on emails. Maybe first email may be the book that they get, the second may be describing bits of the book to help them along the way. The third one may be a bit about functional tennis. And then the fourth one could be about our journal. So you try and get them into a drip feed where you try and sell them something at the end, or you're giving them information. So you're trying to build sort of a fan there. So I've used Klaviyo as another one for e-commerce email marketing. I use Klaviyo for the jumpers. It's really great email marketing software.
Klaviyo,
unbelievable.
I'll get you the link.
Yeah.
We'll put it in the show notes.
Klaviyo is really good for email marketing. So either MailChimp or Klaviyo. And then what else would I use? You don't use, obviously, Instagram for the social. I'm trying to think what else.
You've built that mainly on functional tennis. You've built that mainly on Instagram. How did you build that?
Just through simple strategies, really. Trying to be as organic as possible. Interact with everybody, replying to messages. Actually, it's quite intense. It's been intense 2 years building it. I'm trying to tone down now. We've just been really interacting, having some good quality posts, using business analytics from Instagram to see what works and what doesn't, what posts get you loads of follows, and try and post similar sort of content.
Mm.
So you know that's what people want. That's what's getting you followers. And the more that you post, you can get some nice followers. And it's just doing that consistently day, we were actually shut down for a week. But apart from being shut down for a week, I've posted every single day.
Okay.
So it's just consistency. And I think podcasting, if you have a weekly schedule, you got to post every week. Mm. If you're posting every week at 6 o'clock, people want that every week at 6 o'clock. You got to do that. And it's like everything else, consistency will win in the end of the day.
That's great advice. Mm. It really is, though, isn't it?
I think that's the number. That's the number. Whether you're a pro tennis player or an aspiring tennis player or a computer programmer, just consistently doing it every day, getting better every day, and the 1% all add up.
Yeah.
after a long period of time, you realize you're really good at something or you've done well, and you'll get the breakthrough. The tipping point is Malcolm Gladwell, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah.
It's a good book where they talk about you just get to a certain point where everything starts working then. So I think hard work and consistency pays off.
What kind of content is working for you on Instagram at the moment? Everyone's all abuzz that Instagram's getting tougher to
It has got tougher. I think what's working a lot more now would be speaking to the camera, telling people, showing people what other people are doing wrong. And they can relate to that, where you show them like a pro player and you're saying what they're doing right or wrong and just sort of analysing that with some graphics. That's working really well.
Okay.
And I see a lot of the better tennis accounts now, the more up and coming, they're doing a lot of that, and that's working really well for them. So that's what's working well at the moment. Obviously, a Roger Federer video will always work well.
Okay.
There's some things, but there's copyright issues as well where I can't post a lot of stuff like...
Right. How do you get around that?
You can't. You just don't post it. Okay. You try and set up a relationship with like the ATP Tour, be the main tennis one. And I've sort of... They shut me down a couple of years ago because I posted their videos. And I sort of got... I managed to get the account back. And we've a relationship with them where like I can post once a week.
So I negotiated that with them.
And funny enough, I have another account, not as good as Functional Tennis, but it's sort of a backup account, and that was shut down for the same reasons. But I went through with, they use a copyright company that searches the web for the content, so they wouldn't do it themselves. And they saw the communication that we had with the ATP Tour, and they reinstated the account. So they were sorry. Yeah, but I'm trying to think about other tools. Other stuff I use now is I try and send a lot of video messages rather than sending like a thank you email. I try and send them video messages. So I use like tools on Shopify called Bonjuro, which is an app on my phone. Every time we get an order, we use it goes straight to this app, and it will say Gary's ordered a journal. Gary's from Dublin. Gary's ordered two other journals before. And I get the info, I load the app, get the info, and I just quickly record a video, say, hey Gary, thanks a lot, really appreciate you coming back to the store and ordering again, can't wait for you to get the journals, leave us a review, and you get sent a message, and you're like, whoa, nobody's ever sent me a video thank you message before.
I've never heard of anyone do that.
So normally you get a reply saying, whoa, thanks for the personalized video message, I've never seen that before. Like, so you're just building the wow factor. And
how do they receive that message?
By email.
Okay.
By email. But now I'm trying to change it where I'm WhatsApping the video to them. So instead of getting like, I think these videos get about 70% open rate.
Wow, that's huge.
But you're still missing out on 30%.
Of course.
It is 70% is really impressive, but it's sort of thing where you want 100%. So now I'm trying to use WhatsApp, and like WhatsApp is being 100% open rate. Which is amazing. Then not everybody's WhatsApp, so you use iMessage for some, and then some don't have either, so you just send them the email.
Okay, so the software will help you do all that?
Right now, no. It's quite manual at the minute. But it's really, just when they see the video, the responses are amazing. Like, I did it with the jumpers this year, and I couldn't do it to everybody, but I tried to do it as many as possible, and the response is always, wow. So I think... From my background, which I haven't talked about here, is being the catering business, running a family business, takeaway business, where it was all face-to-face.
Of course.
If you had issues, you couldn't hide from them because it's like, I've had a problem with my order.
Yeah.
You can't say, I'll be back. You can't behind...
Call our call center.
Yeah, you can't hide behind an email sort of thing. So you have to deal with it. So I learned a lot from that, and I thought I've brought that to the web and trying to give a wow factor to the customer, figuring out a way to do that. And so that's
such an interesting strategy, bringing what you've learned in face-to-face retail.
Yeah, which I think that helped us grow a lot with the jumpers, because we built up a good relationship. We tried to go over deliver, like stuff like in the early days we'd say, oh, delivery time is 5 days, but it was actually 2 days.
Okay. So, over promise, under promise over deliver
always works, and that was like we used that for years, like, and people were just amazed with that. So you try and do things to put a smile on the customer's face.
It's so rare, though. I think companies can do that either through scale, or you have such
hard to scale. I think
now.
It is hard to scale. You get away with at the smaller scale. Then you have to figure out a way to scale. But if your team grows accordingly, you should be able to scale it.
I read a great book recently by Paul Jarvis called Company of One, and he was like, "What? How much do you want? What's your goal?" Mm. do you need to scale it to, you know, 200 people in a giant office, or do you need to do exactly what you're doing and find your happy sweet spot?
Yeah.
How much money do you need to earn per year? Aim to earn that, and once you've earned that, anything else is a bonus.
Yeah.
So you can still do that sort of stuff. It was really interesting. It's a different way of approaching things.
Hustle. No, I've came across him. I've seen the only
Paul Jarvis.
Book
he's really a month good. Ago, yeah, really. Excellent.
Yeah, I haven't read the book.
His website is superb. Definitely, you'll check it out.
It reminds me of the book I just read. And I don't know the author's name. I don't have it offhand. It was called Profit First.
Okay.
Where the goal is, and it takes a bit of work, but your goal is where any profit the money comes, your sales come in, they all go into one account, and then you've certain percentages. Some go to VAT, some go to your tax for the year, some goes to profit. So you're allocating profit from the money that comes in. You're not waiting until the end. So the first thing you do is you allocate the profit, and then you pay yourself dividends every 4 months. But the goal is to, every cost should be calculated, and you're really putting money aside. And you're setting up, you know exactly where your business is, and it's quite an interesting way to run your business.
Yeah.
It requires you about having 7 or 8 bank accounts, which gets a bit messy, but you get a good snapshot of your business. You know you're making money, and you don't do stupid things, you don't spend on stupid things, and you realize you don't need investment to grow.
Yeah, I think that's key. And actually, it's funny you say that. It was actually AIB that gave me such good advice. I was in opening my second bank account. And they were like, oh, what kind of business is it, blah, blah, blah. And they're like, oh, have you got a VAT account? And I was like, I don't know what that is. They're like, obviously you pay your VAT. And I was like, yeah. They're like, just open a second account, a dual account. So they're in the same online account. And every month you just set up a direct debit from one account to another.
Yeah.
In it goes. Yeah. Estimate how much out your VAT is. You'll know after a year, obviously. And they're like, just set that up automatically.
Yeah. You don't touch it.
It's brilliant. It was such a simple, basic thing. But it's so good.
Well, this guy even talks us further where your profit account is actually in a different bank.
Oh.
You have no online bank, and so you can't actually, it's really hard to take money from it.
Yeah.
So once it goes in there, it's like, it's over there.
You have to really think about it, or you have to go and do it.
Yeah, so you don't want to do it in a way where you have to take, you do this thing and all of a sudden you're taking money from it. So it takes a while to get it. You start off small percentages, and then as you see, you allocate more, the right amount. And I think I thought it was a great book. Now you can add it to the show notes.
To be honest, you've already predicted something I was going to ask you. I didn't even warn you about this. So every show, I'm going to give away a book to someone.
Yeah.
So you can recommend a book, and we'll give it away to someone who comments on the show or leaves a review.
There's some books here behind me here, and I really like a mixture of books from the biography. So like the Amazon store, the Nike story. Stuff like what's the Elon Musk book, the Da Vinci book. So they're great books, and there's loads.
Think
of
about it for 2 minutes. We've one more thing to go through, and then think about it. We've recommended it at the end.
I'll recommend.
So the last stage is failing, scaling, or selling. You've obviously mentioned that you actually sold a business, and you're still running one. So at what point did you know when to sell? What influenced you to sell, and what influenced you then to keep going with Funky Christmas Jumpers?
Sales, just realised it wasn't for me, and with plenty of sales, so, and the product was easy to sell. It was a good, attractive product with the margins were good, the return rate was 0%, so there's a lot of good things for it, but I just realised I wasn't going to be the guy to grow it. So I think I thought it was just the perfect time to sell. And thinking your sales and profit backing something up, as well as low return rates in an interesting market, it's just figuring out where to sell it. So it was just the time was right. I sold. It took, say, about 6-7 weeks to sell.
How did you sell it?
Actually, I tried a few different avenues. So you can get brokers. There's e-commerce brokers. There is a couple of emails I get that talk about, they list a lot of websites for sale, or Shopify Exchange, where you can list your business for a sale. So it has all your stats there and everything, and that's what I use.
So it's a validated sale that your buyer can see.
Yeah.
Okay.
So you can go on there now and buy sites or sell sites. So went through there, it was painless. Due diligence was pretty low. So that was painless process.
And how did you figure out how much to sell it for? Did you just run numbers on profit, or what way?
I just guessed. I didn't know.
The formula.
There's advice like 3 times profit, 3 times sales. Everybody will tell you something else.
When you look it up, there's a million.
Yeah,
oh, it's 10x
I was just happy to get rid of it at a decent price.
Okay.
And I knew what work I put in. And you can't be greedy either. But then you don't undersell yourself either. So that went. The jumpers have been told many times to sell.
Okay.
Ray Nolan, he kindly had a chat with him one time a few years ago. He's like, just get out of it. Which, you know what, is the right advice. Dragon's Den told me to get out of it.
Really?
Yeah, I've been told more time not to get out. And you know what? I think they're right, to be honest with you. It's more, I heard you talk about it in the last podcast about having like a love for a product where you feel like,
emotionally,
you know,
attached,
emotionally. Yeah. And I think I've been emotionally, it's because it's like your first child.
Yeah,
really.
Your first big one.
I did
yeah.
have one before this one, but I feel this is my first proper child. And you're a bit emotionally attached to it. And I have I have talked about selling the jumpers before. I spoke to our biggest US competitors. But a seasonal business is actually quite hard to sell.
Mm.
It's really hard to sell a seasonal okay. business. So, yeah, it's a bit of a struggle to
You sell. Probably have a very small window to sell it in, do you? You have to sell it right at the end of the season or the start of the season?
Just right at... So you sort of want to sell it early January. Say, look, we had a great year. This is what we made.
Okay.
But you don't sell it in March. We put in your order for the year.
Okay, so you've sunk that cost in again for the next year. Okay.
And like we did obviously talk to our competitors, Tipsy Elves, and they're really just concentrating the US market. And then I looked at, we used to use a fulfillment company. We used to work, pick and pack it ourselves. Then I went to get a fulfillment company doing the North, and then we moved to Galway, and they were looking at buying it. And then I sort of said, I wasn't happy with their deal, and they ended up kicking me out of the warehouse then. Oh, it was terrible. Like, they kicked me out of the warehouse.
You've had some battles in such a nice industry.
You've they've given me, like, you've a week to get your stuff out of work. We're changing we're upgrading our software. You won't integrate. You can't integrate with us, sort of. And it's not worth our cost, so you're out. And
a
the
week?
Guy wanted to buy your business the week beforehand.
Oh,
and because he was
petty.
Trying to screw you, he kicked, like, so, yeah. They were these were terrible, terrible people based out in Galway. And yeah, it was just the emails I got were terrible, saying
it's amazing
I wasn't nice.
You meet.
Like I dealt with them was I there a year, maybe two, and never had one issue.
Mm.
And all of a sudden, they said, "Oh, you didn't treat our employees great." And I was like, 2 years later, you're telling me this?
Yeah.
Like that's bullshit. You're just looking for excuses now. So I got my stuff, got out there, and then I started doing picking and packing, which myself from our own. From our own office, which was a game changer, because I realized some people say if you don't spend a fortune on SEO and Facebook consultants, you're not an e-commerce company. And I've done that. Like I spent a fortune on these guys, and also the picking and packing. It's quite an expensive. The 3PL, the third party logistics, you do your pick, store it, they pick, they pack, and they ship it, can be quite expensive. So I figured out between paying a consultant on Facebook. Facebook could not do my social stuff. Mm. Between them, that's my profit was gone.
Wow.
So I did a few years of that and it just ate into my profit. So between getting rid of them, this is something I want to do a blog post. I haven't done it yet, but between getting rid of the 3PL, the Facebook consultants, and stopped doing stupid giveaways or stupid discounts, profit just went from Not profitable, highly profitable. Just changed
just
overnight.
By changing
so there's
your
little. Sometimes you've got to realize I'm seasonal business. Yeah, I'm going to have to work that bit harder. But the rewards are massive at the end of it.
Is that highly labor intensive?
Yeah.
Picking packages?
Depends how many your shit. You know, it depends how many. But if you could be doing something else instead, if I have a day, like if I was working 9 to 5 somewhere else, you don't want to be doing that.
Okay.
But I can fit it into my day and worked okay.
Sometimes you run all these different mad experiments and you're just like, you don't know what's working. And you have to try it, though. You have to try.
Sometimes you're doing it right.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, no, I'm not doing it right. I've got to be doing that. And then you give this what you should be doing. You go down that way and you realize, you know what? I actually was doing it right. So
you have to keep testing.
You're damned
if you
do, you're damned if you don't.
You have to keep looking. You mentioned it earlier, setting up all your different accounts. So every month I have a spreadsheet and it breaks down every single client. Profitability rates, everything.
I think one thing I learned, it's taken me a long time to learn this, but you really got to look at, is what you're doing profitable?
Yeah.
How profitable is it? And that's what drives everything forward, because you can do stuff where it's not, you don't know your figures.
Yeah.
And I think you got to know how profitable something is. So my wife tells me, it's like, oh, this week, great week in selling journals. It's like, we made X. Like, well, what was the profit?
What's
in
the
that?
Bottom line?
But that's what's important. Like,
it is.
Cause,
yeah.
And just controlling your expenses. It's it just takes years to learn this. Like, And some people are great from the first day, but it's taken me a while to really hone in and learn what's important.
Well, you kind of learn as you go, really, don't you?
Yeah.
You kind of learn you don't know what you don't know at the start, and then you slowly just, it comes out of necessity.
Yeah.
I think you just have to know.
You won't survive.
At the end of the month, that's it.
And yeah, the jumpers, the bad thing was, because it's a few months a year, you're not taking years to learn something that shouldn't have taken a year to learn.
Yeah.
So that's why it's taken so long, I think.
Where can people reach you, Fabio? Where can they learn more about yourself and your projects?
Just email, a little bit on Twitter. I'm trying to spend less time on social these days, but hang around a little bit on Twitter at FabMall. But just to reach out, send me an email or contact me through the jumpers or through Functional Tennis, and I get all.
So your two accounts are Functional Tennis
on Instagram. Better off just come through the website and send me an email through there. I'm always up for a bit of consultancy work or just help people. Like, I've helped numerous people out, be it e-commerce, be setting up pop-up stores, be with email stuff or marketing stuff. There's a bit of, learned a lot along the way, so I'm always willing to help people as well. And yeah,
brilliant, excellent. And what book would you like to give away this month?
I think this one is a really good one, about delivering happiness. I know I talked a lot about wowing the customer.
Yeah.
And this one by a guy called Tony Hirsch, he founded Zappos.
Okay.
And he talks about the struggles of running an e-commerce company, how hard they are to grow financially, but also about having exceptional customer service. And there's a lot to be learned in this book. So it's Delivering Happiness by Tony Hirsch from Zappos.com, who sold to Amazon for about $1 billion.
Okay. So not a bad read.
That's a great, yeah, you learn a lot in that. So
perfect. Yeah. So Delivering Happiness and the Story of Zappos, we'll give that away to someone. All you need to do is just leave a review or put a comment in the notes. Fabio, thank you so much.
Very pleasure. I really enjoyed it. Thank you.
And that was episode 7. I hope you enjoyed it as much as I did. If you do want to win the book that Fabio recommended, just leave us a review on iTunes or share this episode on social, tagging us in it. Talk to you soon.